Hi, this is Mark Ruffalo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
Do you enjoy listening to WGXC and ever wonder how you could become more involved with the station? You can volunteer at events, and you can join a committee. The WGXC Community Programming Committee meets on the third Tuesday of the month at 5:30 p.m. The committee reviews applications, conducts programming evaluations, and provides feedback about the community programming schedule. All are welcome to attend the meetings and become a part of the committee. For more information, you can call 518-697-7400 or email Program Director Katie at katy@wgxc.org.
We are WGXC and we always cheer your day. And if you think we can't, we'll always find a way. That's why the people trust in us, believe in WGXC. We are like superheroes!
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Columbia Economic Development Corporation, working to strengthen the Columbia County tax base through support of local business, job creation, and promoting Columbia County as a place to live and work. For more information, visit columbiaedc.com.
Good morning. You're listening to WGXC. That's right. You're listening to another edition of We the People. And while we don't live in Sweet Haven, I think here in the city of Hudson in Columbia County, God does love us. Although he or she is also showing his or her wrath in the sense of depriving us of good government. Is that possible? Does God work that way? I doubt it. But if a divine being did work that way, clearly here in Hudson and Columbia County, we are being punished. Now, why do I say something so negative and about our beloved community? Because the more I learn about local politics and try to be involved with local politics, the more I discover how sordid the whole business is. I had a show planned. I had two shows planned recently concerning a local issue, and both groups withdrew from appearing. My impulse is to say a curse on both houses, but, you know, I'm kind of sympathetic to both groups. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the Greenport Commons. It's a proposal by the Mental Health Association to build housing in Greenport on Jocelyn Boulevard and Greenacres Road, that sort of intersection right there. And at one point, those community members who were in opposition were scheduled to be on the show and then canceled because they hired a lawyer who I assume advised them not to talk. Meanwhile, the Mental Health Association representatives were going to be on the show, and then they decided, because the opposition wasn't going to be on the show, they didn't want to be on the show. Understandable, all of it, but it's, I think, indicative of how things happen around here. People only speak when they have to or feel compelled to by outside forces. And, of course, we here at Humble WGXC can compel no one because no one's, I suspect, afraid of us. You know, we have the local media in general is kind of passive that way. So if there's any prospect of contention, avoid you, avoid one in this case. And it's amazing because this is not a gotcha kind of program. It's not, you know, I'm not out to hassle anyone or get them to admit to nefarious deeds. It's just a question of trying to get information into our community. And I mean community in the larger sense, not like, you know, just like-minded people. I think we all need representation across the board. So I have a feeling I'm going to be stood up again by a guest. But in the meantime, let me follow up on some of the stories we have been following here on We the People. As you know, or probably don't know if you haven't been listening regularly, we've been concerned about the whole train, bomb trains, and the whole crude oil on the Hudson. So, if that interests you, and it should, let me back up. Oh, my guest is here. That's good. Well, I'll hold off on that for a second. Hi.
Hi.
There's your headphones, and you got to speak right into the microphone. Would you like to be, do you want to be identified or just, yeah? Okay, my guest is Nina Fine, correct?
Yes, correct.
Oh, I got to get your mic on. Ooh, I can't believe I did that. And you're here to talk about the Hudson school system.
Yes.
A topic that interests a lot of us because we pay a lot for that school system.
Yes.
It's,
And can you hear me?
Yes,
great.
Perfect.
Okay.
And, even those of us who don't have children in the system are always curious about what's going on there because it's a major part of our taxes that we pay.
Yes.
And we would like to see better results.
Right.
I mean, so let's begin with your story. You have a child who is 9?
I have a child who is almost 7. So
oh, 7.
He's been in the school system for kindergarten and first grade. And, you know, let me start with a caveat that I don't have anything to compare it to except for my own schooling.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in outside of Washington, D.C. in a town called Chevy Chase, Maryland.
Oh, yeah.
Their schools are probably some of the best in the country.
Yeah.
So the comparison
Your standards are high.
My standards are probably pretty high. I also went to private school for the first 6 years.
Yeah.
So, yes, my standards are probably pretty high. And, you know, nobody feels the taxes more than I do because I have three properties I pay taxes on to go to that school.
Mm-hmm.
So my son went for kindergarten and first grade. And I feel that the teachers are caring. I feel that the staff does care about the children. I feel like there's effort there to make it a positive place. They have some things in place to reward children for good behavior and for doing great things. So I think that the mindset is there toward doing the right thing and helping the children. But as you know, the Hudson school system has been identified as a failing district, a district in trouble. And the superintendent has been working to try to change that.
And your experience bears that out, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, you see the problems.
I see the problems. I see that there's some effort being made. It's very, very slow. Too slow for us. So we are going to be moving out of the
right.
district. There are many other parents that are moving out of the district as
right.
well.
That's the point of this story, I
right.
guess, is that young families or
right.
families with young children tend to leave the Hudson School District
yes.
because it's such a failing district.
Yes. And I think that there's a large contingency of young people who are coming up to Hudson trying to make a life outside of the
mm-hmm.
city. We started here as weekenders. And then decided to try to make a life like a lot of people do, saying,
mm-hmm.
oh, it's a beautiful town. We absolutely love Hudson. There's nothing like it around. We've looked at every other little town that has better school districts, and there's just nothing that compares to Hudson. We have that huge main street with all the shopping and the
mm-hmm.
dining, and it's just beautiful, and the arts and the culture and the people. So, you know, we got up here as weekenders, and I had my son up here because we thought it would be quieter. And I started to make friends of other moms. And as I've made these friends of other moms and we raised our children together, and it's a beautiful place to raise a baby and a toddler
mm-hmm.
and a
yes.
preschooler even, you know, we banded together. We created a co-op preschool where we would, you know, trade off and do little educational enrichment projects with our children. And it was lovely. And then it came time to go to school. And some people decided to do Hawthorne Valley.
Right.
And others decided to homeschool. And others decided to try out the public school, which we were one of them. And as we've been doing it, we've had the same parents who did the co-op preschool have banded together to try to improve the schools, to see what we could do. Maybe we can volunteer our time and our efforts.
And that's where you found resistance.
And that's where we found resistance. Yeah.
Specifically, I mean, was it you offered and were just told, stay away?
No, it wasn't that. It wasn't like that. We offered, we said, you know, we'd like to help out, and we felt that we were embraced. But the reality is, after a year of a lot of our effort and time and meetings, and we feel like we really didn't get any results within the year of what we had really wanted to accomplish. There was resistance.
What did you hope to accomplish?
What we really wanted to do, our focus was to provide some kind of academic rigor for the students who were above grade level and could move faster. We feel that the focus is on the lowest common denominator, and that all the money and the effort is going into helping out those with special needs, those who are underperforming and have come into school without being prepared at all. In terms of don't know their alphabet, don't know their letter, their numbers, don't know their shapes, don't know their colors. And then you have a group of parents who have children who they taught those things
right.
to before they came into school. So for them to sit around for 3 months at the beginning of kindergarten and go over colors and numbers and letters is pretty boring. And then to go over and then to start addition and work on that for an entire year, and then to go into first grade and work on addition again for an entire year. For some children, it's very, very repetitive and boring.
And there was no effort to sort of separate students by ability?
They say, as soon as you bring that up, my suggestion was, why don't we take the kids who are the highest performers in each class and put them together in one class?
Mm-hmm.
You don't need an additional teacher. There's no extra funds. You're just grouping them together. That's tracking. That's tracking. We can't do that. Yes, that's terrible. Oh, horrible. So, and some of the parents felt that they liked the diversity.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd like to have them grouped a little bit closer so that there's not just one in each class. Because right now what's happening is There might be, in some classes, there might be a group of five or six that group together and they do higher math and they do higher reading and whatnot. And then in some classes, there's one. And who does that child have a peer? Right. How does that child reach to higher heights if there's nobody above them? So we are looking to hopefully get the schools to group them a little bit more into classrooms so that instead of being spread out with a couple in each class, there's maybe five or six in half of the classes, and then maybe some of the class there are none.
Yeah, no, I've never understood the opposition to tracking, frankly, because, I mean, I understand that, you know, there's that it can become a system that, you know, keeps down certain students.
Correct.
But if you have attentive teachers who are willing to identify students who need to be moved into the tracking the tracking track, it's not such a horrible system.
Right.
And it does kind of separate those students who are interested or advanced from those who are slower. And
I think that there has to be some kind of system where you can earn your way into it. That's the problem,
sure.
I think, with tracking.
Right.
It becomes children are, once they're tracked to not be in it in kindergarten, they can never get into it.
Right.
I'm
familiar with, like, horror stories from tracking from Westchester County, where I grew up, and it wasn't even about black and white racial things. It was about, like, ethnic things. You know, like, there were schools where if you were a certain group, they tracked you to be vocational.
Oh, yeah.
In the old days. You know what I mean? It was like...
Right.
And it was just completely ridiculous.
Right. I think we're not really looking for tracking. We're just looking for our children to be able to move ahead where they can and not be bored. So that's been our main issue, is that there's been a lot of boredom. There's been a lot of repetition. And we feel like, first of all, there used to be a gifted and talented program, we were told, in Hudson, and there is no longer. We think that should come back into play. I feel that parents who come up here, if they feel that there's a place for their exceptional children or even their just average bright children to go and feel challenged and feel interested and want to learn and want to go to school, then they can say, okay, well, I could make a life here. And yes, there's a large group of children here who are disadvantaged and all that, but my child's going to get a good education, my child's going to be challenged, and my child can move through and go to a good college from here. And I think that
it happens.
Destination, it does happen.
I mean, I know a lot of people who have raised their kids here, and the kids have gone on to good colleges and stuff.
Absolutely,
it
does happen. But I think that the mode of operation here is, well, you know, you're an educated parent, you work with your child's going to graduate, so why do we have to worry about them? It's like, but I want my child to be stimulated. Well, if you want them stimulated above and beyond whatever we're doing, then you can do it at home after school, whatever. I said, but why am I paying my taxes and sending him to school for 6 hours a day if I'm going to be doing all the challenging at home?
Are those actual quotations or paraphrases of what you were told?
Yes. I volunteered to come in, pull my child and any other children that they felt, you know, could be performing at a higher level and donate my time and come twice a week and do some kind of an enrichment program with them. And I was told, no, I can't do that. And I need to enrich him at home after school. It's just not acceptable to me. I'm not going to send my child to a school where I'm going to be enriching him after he's already tired from a day.
Did you take this all the way up to the superintendent?
We've been meeting with the superintendent, and I think she's much more on board. It's just that things work very, very slowly.
And the principals are sort of... ingrained. I mean, they're kind of in that job, and they're hard to remove, obviously. I mean, if someone's not amenable to...
And teachers are, you know, the teachers that are not performing. And now they're doing testing to try to prove that the teachers are...
Right.
And I think that's ridiculous. I don't think that that proves much of anything except for how prepared those particular students are. And I think they need another way. So they're just focused on testing now, testing all through school, from kindergarten on up.
Right. The problem with a critique of the school is that at some point it starts to seem like maybe someone just doesn't like some of the people. You know, I mean, we have a disadvantaged community or whatever you want to call it, group in this town.
Yes.
And I'm sure there are some people who are thinking maybe you just, not you particularly, but that, you know, you just don't want your kids, you know, mingling with kids who might bring them down in some way or maybe give them bad habits or whatever.
Right. And for me, it's more about the education aspect. I just want my child to work at the level he can work at and as high as he can go. And that's not happening. So in terms of that, you know, I think that there's, you know, there's been talk of, oh, you're just tiger moms. You're just, you know,
that's
you're elitist.
I didn't want to say it. It's good that you're saying it because I didn't want to accuse you of it.
But the interesting thing is in all of our efforts so far this year, the only children we've really benefited are the children who are disadvantaged because we brought in, you know, we've brought in special programming and we've tried to do a coin class to help out the teachers to do some stuff that's more hands-on. We feel like there should be more hands-on learning and less focus on dittos to make it more interesting that maybe the higher learners could
dittos?
Be doing something
mean?
More. They do a lot of ditto work. So they sit at their seats and they do paperwork.
Oh.
Yeah. So 2 + 2 = 4, and they just do it and they do it and they do it. They use computer games to help out, but there's not a lot of real life learning going on because of I think the Common Core they don't really know how to teach it yet, and they're sort of getting their feet, you know, into it. And so what's happening is they're relying a lot on dittos.
Right. And the problem it seems to me with the Common Core is they're more worried about the testing of the Common Core than actually the content of the Common Core.
Right. And the Common Core is supposed to push everybody higher.
Right.
And it is to a certain extent, but there are some children who really could be going much, much faster than the school is going here. And I think that in comparison to what they're doing at other schools that are higher performing schools, they're much lower. Even just the testing, the state testing was much harder than the local testing. So the expectations here are much lower, that's good enough. And I don't feel that that's good enough. I feel that what's good enough is for my child to get to a place where he's like, wow, I don't know how to do that. And that's when he's challenged.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea how to do that. Not, oh, yeah, I can do that. Yes, that's easy. That's easy. That's easy. It's like, sure, he can do that. And he can do that his whole life. But when he gets to a job and he gets to something that's going to be difficult for him, he's going to be like, shattered. I don't know how to do this. And I thought I was smart. And that's not what I want for him. I want him to be able to meet a challenge, go, wow, I don't know how to do this. And I want to find out.
Now, without mentioning where you're moving to, I understand that you're going to put your child into a private school, right?
Yes. Yes. And I think that some of the issues that I have with the school system have to do with just public schools in general.
Right.
That I feel like there's so much focus on paperwork. There's not a lot of real-world learning. There's not a lot of kinesthetic learning. There's no in-depth investigation of any kind of topics. And, you know, and some of the problems of I have an issue and how do you address the issue and how does something get changed in a system that has so much bureaucracy? And I just,
well, between the federal and state mandates, there's so much that they can change, right? I mean, there's, my understanding is that a good, a healthy percentage of what takes place in public schools is they have to do it.
Yes.
And aren't even funded to do some of those things.
And there's a ton of money that's going into pensions and health insurance and all the other things. So, and there's all the rules about the teachers. And it's a very complicated system to try to make a difference in.
And if you'll excuse an editorial comment, while I think I have no problem with teachers being unionized, I think tenure is a bad system, frankly. I don't see, I mean, you know, the defense of tenure used to be that it protects speech and other things for the teachers involved. But I don't think that's really, I mean, there may be communities out there that's important, but I don't really think it is, especially not on the lower grades. I mean, you know, who's going to fire somebody for, you know, the wrong political, I mean, they might if they, I mean, who has political opinions in elementary school? More important, I mean, I just, you know, you read, excuse me, I think it's 5 years now and you're up for tenure and you have a lifetime job.
Is it?
Yeah, I think it's 5 in the state. And it's just unthinkable compared to other jobs. You know, you just don't have that kind of protection.
Yeah, I wish I had that kind of protection.
I know. Everybody does, right? I mean, yeah. We'd all like to
find
be,
my own work. So.
We all like to be tenured.
Good luck to me.
Yeah. Actually, I have tenure here at the radio station.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm trying to get rid of it. I'm asking them to
please,
fire me.
Please, let me go.
Because it's such a high-paying job, you
it
know,
is.
And it's just too much. It's a real burden. Anyway, so you decide to move.
So we decided to move.
And you think you? I shouldn't say that you think. You feel that you speak for a number of people, right?
I feel that I speak for a number of people. Our choice is to go to Montessori school. Montessori school does a lot of hands-on learning. It's more child self-directed. Which I think fits my son's personality particularly, but also grades are grouped. Grades 1 through 3 are grouped together. Mm-hmm. Grades 4 through 6. So if my son is in the 1 through 3 group and he's working on a third grade math level, he can do that. They
right.
have the materials. Let's say he's in 1 through 3 and he can do fifth grade math, which he can't. But let's say he could. They would go and they would get him fifth grade math materials and have him work on that. As long as they'll make sure it's sequential so that he's not missing any gaps. There's no gaps in his foundation. But as soon as he shows progression, if he can move super fast, then great, he'll do that.
Right.
In public school, even in the best of public schools, I'm told that if my son is in first grade and he can perform second grade math, they will not give him second grade math, no matter what. And I say, why not? So he has to just sit there while everybody else is doing it. He's done with first grade math. He's been done with first grade math for at least 6 months.
Yeah, you know, my child was in a public school system where they were highly responsive to parents.
Okay.
In fact, they managed, my wife was involved at the time, they managed to get rid of a principal who was just a chair sitter who really had no interest in education anymore. But I think that's partly because in Westchester, you know, the parents, first of all, taxes are
very high.
Phenomenal. And, you know, parents are more demanding.
Yes.
Perhaps one of the problems here is there's not enough parents right. who feel the way you do.
Correct.
And, you know, willing to just go with the flow, you know, and just, you know, that's a situation that's very hard to rectify.
Right. And the critical mass, I think we sort of reached a little bit of a critical mass this year. And after this year's experience, I'd say half of the people in our group are probably leaving the district.
Yeah. I know. It's a phenomenon I'm familiar. I mean, I one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because I know you're not alone. I've heard this from many people.
Yes.
I shouldn't say many, but a number of people in the similar situation
yes.
who do not. I mean, I know a lovely family, 3 kids. None of them are in, you know, public school yet. And they want to leave because of that.
Correct.
Now, what made you, this is sort of a side thing, what made you decide against private schools up here, like Hawthorne Valley?
I didn't feel like it was a good fit for us.
Yeah.
I you know, the fact
I love
that
phrase.
Yeah.
I remember when my daughter was applying to college, they talked about a fit.
Yes, like right, a fit. It
a
wasn't,
fit.
It's not a good fit for us.
Yeah.
I think it's a great fit for some people, especially if they're having social issues at school. My son is having, you know, boredom issues at school. So I feel that Hawthorne Valley is not going to really stimulate him academically mm-hmm. the way I would like to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Montessori will. And the closest Montessori school is in Greenbush. And that would necessitate a move up to a little bit up
right.
because we're not going to drive an hour each way. It's just not feasible for
mm-hmm.
us. So in that case, we're still moving. So regardless, we figured everything that the only thing we could do to stay in Hudson would be to homeschool. And I feel that that's not a really great fit for him either.
Yeah, I used to fantasize about homeschooling.
I fantasize about it too.
You know, and it's just like, really? I mean, because it would have been me, not my wife. She has the good job. And so it would have been my burden, and I would have just stayed in bed. You have the day off, kid.
Yeah, nice.
Go read a book.
You're on your own.
Yeah.
But,
you know, it's a sad story, and it just kind of bums me out to think that, you know, probably the least represented group among newcomers are families. You know
yes.
what I mean? There's plenty of newcomers who are like my wife and myself, who are, you know, beyond raising kids
mm-hmm.
or very young and don't have families yet. And that category of people with children who are moving here, obviously the people who are from here, you know, are used to it and, you know, right. sort of resigned
and
to
what
the system
is. And we have a lot.
Is.
We have people in that category who are also in our group. who are from here and raised here, and they want to see the schools improve as well. So it's not just people moving in, our quote unquote outsiders, but they're people from here who understand that there's some serious work needing to be done at this school. I think that, you know, if I would give a message to everybody in Hudson, it would be, if you have kids, if you don't have kids in the school system, the one thing that I feel is going to bring Hudson to the next level is to have young families stay here, make a life here, because those are the people who are going to be buying houses and fixing them up and wanting to contribute to the community, wanting to better it, because they have children in the community. They're going to want the park to look beautiful. They're going to want, you know, they're going to want the river to be clean. They're going to want a beautiful place for their children to play. They're really going to be invested in infrastructure of the community. And, you know, weekenders are just not going to do that. Weekenders are going to come up. They're going to spend their money for sure. On the weekends, they're definitely going to buy houses. They may or may not fix them up. But they're definitely going to contribute to the economy. But in terms of getting involved and volunteering and being on boards, they're just not going to do that. Well, and I think that's where Hudson is really not paying attention. I think that the administration is looking at, I mean, the vision for Hudson is a parking lot. I think that really says everything about our leadership, is that their vision is a parking lot. We need good schools. If there was some kind of a high-class school, whether it was a high-performing public school or an alternative private school, I think the funding would be an issue with a private school because the families don't have the expendable income.
There was an effort to do a charter school at one point.
Yes, I know.
Which failed miserably. And,
I know.
For a number of reasons, including, you know, union opposition.
Pushback, yes. Yeah. Yes. And, you know, that's why our group decided not to go that route. I don't know if it's feasible to have an alternative school, but everybody deserves a quality education. And I think that this school system could provide a quality education for everybody, but it's going to be tricky because you have kids who come into kindergarten not recognizing their own name written on paper. And then you have kids who are doing addition and subtraction by the time they come into kindergarten. So imagine a teacher who has 25, maybe 26 kids, and they got a kid who doesn't speak English. They got a special needs kid who has to be worked on for, they have stimulation issues, so they have to do pudding play in the classroom. And then they have a child.
What was that? Pudding play?
Yes.
What is that?
There's a child that had to have hands put in pudding to desensitize him in the middle of, in the middle of a regular classroom day. So there's that child. There's a child who doesn't speak English. There's a few children who don't know their names, don't know any of the letters or numbers. And then there are children who are doing addition and subtraction. How are you going to teach all those children with one lesson, with one teacher, and maybe an aide for a half a day? It's impossible. I don't know how anybody gets anything done.
Yeah.
Honestly, I marvel at the teachers. I'm like, how do you do it?
It is funny.
So many levels in this classroom. It's ridiculous.
And it is a reversal in the sense that, you know, I went to parochial schools, and the nuns taught to the highest level. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Which has its downsides, too,
yes.
Because it means a lot of people get left behind.
Yes, yes. But then there are push-in services. I mean, Title I funding gives push-in services so that these
what
children...
What does that mean? What's a push-in service?
A push-in service is when there's an aide assigned to a child in a classroom, or they also have pull-out, which would be to remove children from the classroom to get speech, to get reading, to get language help, whatever they need. And that's very disruptive. So I think they're trying to get more push-in services, which would be the aide would come, and they would try to group kids a little bit better in classrooms so that the aides could push in and work with a group of kids in the classroom. So they're not pulling kids out. You know, it's very distracting for the teacher. Where's this kid? Where's that kid? Oh, that's right. They went to speech. Oh, where's that kid? They went to... It's very, very difficult for them to keep on track.
So, I mean, to sort of get to a bottom line here, you think it's a systemic problem, or do you think it's specific to, say, the principal of the elementary school? Or, I mean...
Well, it's obviously a systemic problem because we have a very low-performing school system.
But I mean beyond the Hudson school system, just the nature of public education in America or something. You know what I mean?
It's partially that. But I don't think it's fully that. We have... I've been told that the Hudson School District. I think the Hudson School District used to be very good, from what I've been told 20 some years ago, that it was one of the highest rated in the state, which is kind of hard to believe. I don't know what they can do, because they have such, I know that they focus a lot. We have a lot of special children. We have a lot of high needs. We can't possibly do it. But I think that the same thing that's being done with the special needs and the folks that need more attention can also be done with the higher learners, in that just group them together in the classroom and provide somebody to enrich them on their level part of the day and not all day. And yes, sometimes they're going to be bored and sometimes it's going to be review, but they could be delving deeper into a subject. They could be doing community service. I mean, my idea was that, you know, the kids who we did a coin class. So the kids who really get coins and are really into it, they could help out at the book fair. They could be taken down with an aide and they could run the cash register and they can count the change and they could do something real world with their experience that goes, really, now I'm really getting a benefit for being advanced, you know? And then the other kids see that and they're like, I want to learn how to count money too, because I want to work at the book fair. Now you've got a whole class who's looking up instead of looking down.
Do you feel that they use the word tracking as a dirty word?
Yes, absolutely. So ooh, tracking. Ooh, can't do that. No, it's very un-PC to talk about tracking. I think that the lower school, because it's on its own and it's in its own building and it's only pre-K to 2, I think it gets neglected and people are not really looking at it because we're worried about graduation rate. Well, that's where it starts.
Right.
And I think that the superintendent realized that that's where it starts, but the focus really hasn't been on the primary school yet. And it needs to be, because that's where we lose kids. And that's where parents are coming in. They're going, I want to help. I want to do something. What can I do? The PTA used to be parents and teachers, and then now it's run by teachers mostly. And the parents are peripheral. There's no notices don't go home that there's a PTA meeting. It's hard to find out about it. It's kind of done a little bit secretively, it feels.
So
I was on the PTA when
very
I
Hudson.
Started. Yes, I was on the PTA when I started.
Let's have a meeting at
and then, yes,
11 a.m.
We have meetings at 3 p.m. so that parents who have to pick up other children can't attend. Parents who work can't attend. So meetings are at 3 p.m. on Mondays, something like that. So it just feels that it's like, you know, we just want to do what we've been doing and we're just comfortable and we want to continue the way we are and don't bother us.
Mm-hmm.
And your child's going to be fine and your child's going to graduate high school. So why are you being such a pain in our butt? And my feeling is, I don't want him to just graduate high school. Mm-hmm. That's not my vision for my child. You know, get on board, destination graduation. I think it's great. But what about destination life skills and a great job and success and challenge? What about that? And I'm sure there are other children, and I know that there are other families, and disadvantaged families are not necessarily the families who don't care about education. There are a lot of the disadvantaged children who are doing great, and they're valedictorians. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that they just don't feel necessarily that they have a voice to change the schools. They feel that, well, I'm just going to have to enrich my child at home. And that's what they do.
Yeah. Well, it's a sad story in that sense. I mean, it's just not just the unresponsiveness of the school system, but that people who would contribute something unique to this town, this city, feel the need to leave.
Yes. I think that's the saddest part, because I can't tell you how much we fell in love with Hudson, and we love the people, and we love the culture, and we just love the sort of artsy aspect of it. We love the fact that it's multicultural and our child comes in contact with people of all different cultures and religions, and it's wonderful. It's a wonderful place, and it could be so great if everybody would just focus on the educational system. We need to improve our educational system and do what you can. If you don't have kids in the school, you know, knock on the door. How can I help? There's a reading mentor program at the middle school. They're going to be doing community gardens. Can I help with that? Mm-hmm. Can I, you know, I have really great expertise. I have a master's in education that I'm not using right now. Could I teach a class? Could I come in and do something?
Mm-hmm.
And if everybody really focused on bringing the school system up, and I think that it could happen if the community really bound behind it, then Hudson would just be taken to another level and not just be a destination town. It could be a real living town where everybody could benefit, live, and be successful with an award-winning school. And we have all these beautiful, we have professional musicians here, professional artists here. Imagine the resources that we have in this town. If they could be if they could be put into the school system, it could be a stellar, stellar educational system up here. I mean, can you imagine people saying, I moved to Hudson for the schools? That would be wonderful. That's my dream. I moved to Hudson because the schools are so amazing and we have such an amazing art program and music program. And I do think that the middle school does have an amazing music program from what I've heard.
Yeah.
We're not there yet. But just imagine, you know, we have this professional artist that does this and we have this professional musician that does this. And we have.
Of course, one of the problems, it seems to me, is that Hudson, the city of Hudson, doesn't technically control the system. It's a system shared with other townships. I mean, Greenport is part of the school system.
But we're our own district. Hudson's its own district.
Right.
So it's only three schools in the district.
Right. But I mean, we draw from people outside of the city of Hudson.
For what?
For the students.
No, we don't. Hudson. No, the
Hudson School
lines.
District includes outside
it
the
does.
City of
Clavrack.
Hudson.
It does. Clavrack. Yes. Correct. Outside
and
the
Greenport.
City of Hudson. Yes.
And Greenport.
Correct. Greenport. Hudson,
so it makes it very hard, right, for the city itself to sort of get control of this of the school system. You know, we're sharing it with other townships, and
I think the other townships would be really happy to have a great school system too.
Oh, they would.
Oh,
but
yes, yes.
My point is, it's those townships have a very different character from Hudson.
Yeah,
and are probably less motivated in some respects. I mean, Greenport, for example. I imagine is the parents there. I don't really know.
Yeah, we have Greenport parents.
Oh, yeah?
Yep, we have Greenport parents, and it's just I think everybody really wants a better school system. It's just especially when you first have a child. It's like we don't even know what a school system's supposed to be. We don't know anything, so we're just sort of finding our way and stumbling on stuff and going, wait, what about this? Well, why are they watching videos during the day? Why are they watching videos in school at all? I mean, I know it's a rainy day, but, you know, sometimes my son will come home and he will have watched an hour of videos cumulatively over the day.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that's not a quality education from my point of view. If I could get everybody who's listening to say, I want to volunteer, I want to help, I'm going to give you my information if I can, or leave it with you. I don't know how to do that. Should I give out an email?
Sure. If you want.
Okay. So if you want to get involved with the school system in whatever way, my email is nina@ninafine.com. That's Nina, N-I-N-A, at Nina Fine, N-I-N-A-F-I-N-E.com. And if you contact me, I'll get you in with the right person who's working on that particular project. We have school gardens that are coming up. We have people who are working on more active recesses for indoors when it's too cold. They've actually changed the temperature that they're allowed to go out. They've dropped it from 32 to 20 now. So next year they should be able to go out a lot more. So, you know, there have been some little wins for us that we feel like, okay, well, they're definitely trying to make the school better. I think Ms. Suttmeyer is making a very large effort, but she has a very large job.
Yeah.
So anybody who can help out, please say, I want to join. Come to the Board of Education meetings. Say, how do I get involved? What can I do to help? These are my skills. Where can I go? Who can you connect me with? People who want to, you know, help to get books into the hands of kids. People who want to help do parenting programs. People who want to have a special affinity for math or science. We need everybody to really help.
Well, your enthusiasm is infectious. It's unfortunate.
Are you ready to volunteer? You're ready to quit your job here and volunteer for the school system,
no,
right?
No, I've actually wondered, you know, what I could do to, like, get involved. The reading program, there's questions about that, but there are other things, I'm sure.
Right.
I'm just sad that you've decided not to continue this struggle.
Yeah, I think it came down to either we're going to stay and we're going to create our own thing, or we're just going to plug and play. Yeah. And I think we're tired.
Yeah.
We just want to plug and play and live our lives. And it's sad because I feel like, you know, I had a chance to really maybe do something big here. And so my chance is gone, too.
Yeah.
That's frustrating for me as well.
Well, we've been talking to Nina Fine. And if you want to contact her about the Hudson School System and get more information about who to talk to or where, you know, how to get involved, write her at, email her at nina@ninafine.com. N-I-N-A-F-I-N-E. Pretty simple name. .com.
Yes.
Nina, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And it's a topic that, you know, anybody who moves here starts to think about it, even if you don't have children in the system.
Absolutely.
Because we can't believe that it's such a failing system.
Yeah.
And, you know, I for example, I think the Bridge program is a great program because it's identifying, you know, where a big part of the problem is, and that is the failing students at a certain age.
Right.
And how to intervene then. Mm-hmm. But your point is well taken, too, that, you know, it's got to begin
early. The Bridge program is, you know, a different kind of learning for people who learn differently.
Right.
Why can't we have that for everybody?
Right.
You know, there's lots of children who learn differently, who need kinesthetic learning. They can't do dittos every day.
Well, you know, that's the sad thing about what's been called the dumbing down of America is that our culture is pitched to the lowest common denominator. Most of the things, you know, are pitched to the lowest common denominator. And it's very hard to maintain standards of any kind.
Yes.
Anyway, I want to thank you again for coming in.
Thank you.
I'm going to play a little music, and then we'll get to the rest of the show. Well, there you have it, a critique of the Hudson school system by a disaffected parent. Something I'd love to, in fact, I have to admit, the superintendent has offered to come into the show, and we'll see if that ever actually happens. I haven't set that up yet, but I would love to talk to her, Maria Suttmeyer. And the report on her just now was actually very positive, which is good to hear. So, to end the show, we have, you know, a good 10 minutes left. I wanted to update you on some of the stories we've been following. At one point, I was going to tell you, before I guess came in, about this whole regional crisis. You know, I also co-host the Thursday afternoon show, and I was criticized recently by someone for making it seem like I was somehow pro-fracking or pro-whatever, and frankly, I was just trying to, I don't know, give the opposition a chance to speak, and we were talking about this event that I'm going to remind you of right now, and that is going to take place at Basilica next Wednesday, July 9th. Crude oil on the Hudson, a virtual pipeline and real risks. Now, they're calling it virtual because it's not actually a pipeline. You know, it's not like Keystone, which is an actual pipe. This is transporting crude oil through our region, as well as other places, but it comes down on the Hudson in barges, in ships, and trains. And if you're up on this, you'll know that last week, there was a spill in Albany, right in our own backyard. There was no explosion, thank God. But it's incidents like this that make one aware of how volatile this whole, crude oil is. I mean, and there's also a natural gas that's shipped that is even more volatile. And it's just a disaster. And it's, you know, given that the ability of local communities to ban fracking was upheld recently in the state's highest court, I think there might be hope on this. You know, this is all editorial, by the way. This is not the view of the station. The station has no views, per se. It's just us, we lonely commentators here on the air who get to voice our cranky opinions. Do not hold the station responsible. You can hold me responsible for anything I say. But this is a disaster in the making. And let's hope it doesn't involve an explosion that hurts people to incite people to action. I know there's going to be a problem, you know. When he was vice president, to ram through an exception for the energy industries, that they are not subject to some of the regulations and rules of other industries. Not to mention that you always have the problem of transporting anything interstate. Raises all kinds of legal issues. But anyway, I think this is a scary thing. And if you want to learn more about it, I guess that's the main point here. Basilica will have a... in fact, one of the people speaking there, I believe, has been on this show a number of times. Philip Musagas from Riverkeeper. Riverkeeper will be there. Scenic Hudson will be represented. And it's sponsored both by Basilica and the Hudson Sloop Club. If you haven't gotten involved, get involved with the Hudson Sloop Club. Great bunch of people who, you know, they actually, in the middle school, they had a bunch of kids making a boat that has proven, if not seaworthy, pond-worthy. That's right. They floated it in Oakdale, and it did not sink, which is saying a lot, right? So that's one thing we've talked about. Okay, also we've been concerned here with the Pine Haven, potential privatizing of Pine Haven. So under the name of our beloved chairman of the Board of Supervisors, Patrick Grattan, the board has issued a statement which is interesting, to say the least. Interesting is one of those, you know, non-words that just kind of masks true feelings. One of the categories, for example, is affordability. Now, if you've heard Sean Morris, who's been on the show twice and is the union rep for the employees of Pine Haven, you know this whole affordability issue is, in his opinion, a canard. How do you measure affordability for a institution that serves the public, our public, that is to say, us here in Columbia County? You know, it's amazing to me. One of the things that was amazing at one point, these very same Board of Supervisors were willing to buy a golf course and manage a golf course which would have cost a lot of money and would have been a disaster to do. They're willing to do that. But here we have something more essential to the quality of life in Columbia County, and they're quibbling over a subsidy that's really not that outrageous. And, you know, they talk about available funds and, you know, maybe. The fact is the IGTs, which stands for intergovernment transfers, are quite high. A lot of it is paid for not by, I mean, this is the threat that Supervisor Grattan and others keep making, is that it's going to raise your taxes. Well, that's questionable. Your taxes are already there. A lot of the money doesn't even come from your direct taxes. Granted, anything that comes from the government is taxes, but when we're talking about IGTs, we're talking about government money that's coming from other sources, and yes, it's your money, but, you know, who doesn't want to bring back money into their own communities? Everybody does. I mean, that's what PORC is all about in one sense, right? I mean, bring some of that tax money back to the people who actually paid the taxes originally. Anyway, so they try to counter some of the union claims in their official missive, and I urge you to. I think it's, in fact, on the website for Columbia County. And speaking of which, while you're at that website, we're running out of time here. I just wanted to bring up one other thing. While you're at that website, check out the so-called RFP. That is a request for proposals. You know, the last show we talked about the Staley B. Keith Center and their effort to create a mentoring program and get funded for a mentoring program. And suddenly it appeared that another agency was interested in that same proposal. So a RFP was issued. Excuse me. And you can see that on the Columbia County website. And as you read it, you'll wonder, how did they come up with that? And is it specifically designed to exclude new organizations like the Staley B. Keith Center? For, I think the full title is Staley B. Keith Center for Social Justice. Staley B. Keith was a respected member of the Hudson family. How's that? Family? Community? Whatever you want to call us. People who live in Hudson. And the reluctance, you know, the county, this would be my final comment of the day. The county sees Hudson and Greenport. You know, I began by talking about the Greenport Commons situation, and it's interesting to me that everything that no one else wants in the county seems to end up in either Hudson or Greenport. So here's this affordable housing combined with housing for the mentally ill. And for once, they didn't try to put it in Hudson. They tried to put it in Greenport. And if you, this is my final comment, if you saw about those rankings of all the towns and cities in the state of New York, you'll notice that Hudson and Greenport were way down at the bottom. So take the economically disadvantaged towns and screw them further. That's kind of how it works. But you can, boy, I've never really kind of got such a call to action. And we're not allowed to do call to actions. No call to action. This is just, you know, think about it. Anyway, this has been another edition of, what's the name of the show? Oh, We the People. And I'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.